and welcome to Prosody, 90.5 FM's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest today is the poet Mihaela Moscaluc. Mihaela was born and raised in Romania. She came to the United States in 1996 to complete graduate work in American literature. Her poems, reviews, translations, and articles have appeared in the Georgia Review, Prairie Schooner, Tri-Quarterly, New Letters, Poetry International, Arts and Letters, Pleiades, and Soundings. She teaches at Monmouth University and in the Drew University MFA program in Poetry and Translation and lives in Ocean, New Jersey. Her new book, entitled Father Dirt, was published by Alice James Books. Hi, Mihaela. How are you?
Hi, thank you. It's great to be here. Thank you, Jan.
Thank you so much for being on the show. I've been a long time admirer of your work, and I love Father Dirt, so it's really great to have you on. So could you read some poems?
Thank you, yes. Okay. I'm going to start with a poem. Most of the poems in the collection are set in Romania.
Okay.
And so I was born and grew up in Romania, and I came here when I was 24. And this first poem is, as we like to say, based on a true story. And this one Romanian word, strigoi, and the Romanians believe that the spirit of the dead who are not given proper burial, who are not mourned properly, return to hunt the living. So that's the strigoi. How to ask for my hand at my grandmother's grave. What a waste of space. You murmur as a train cuts through a cemetery whose halves rest like drowsy wings between two pine forests. Then, spooky, as our window zips by faces smiling from porcelain plates glued to crosses. You've crossed the ocean to marry me, so I cannot say I knew only one of them, but they're all mine, this dead turned strigoi who'll not return to their bodies because the earth is too loud and the town has betrayed them. But I have to warn you, we carry cemeteries on our heads, in our bellies, round our ankles. We carry them to work and we carry them to sleep. And when we make love, they moan, they rattle, they sing. When our spines start sinking, we spit and curse and dance the pain off. When I bring you to grandmother's grave behind the Dacian fortress, she'll be armed with questions. How hardy your love, how soft your fingers, and you're dead. How do you spoil them? After you cup your hands to catch the soul, she'll want to know, how do you release it? Don't tell her about ashes thrown to winds. Don't say you've never spilled red wine onto the earth to quench your father's thirst, or that you never read him the Sunday paper. Do not tell her you love him, but have never seen his grave. I'll translate your silence and spread a white cloth under the rose trellis. We'll offer walnut breads and gossip, and she'll forgive and bless us. Then send me back across the ocean with a saddlebag of ghosts. And I'll read another poem that was triggered actually by a poem by Khaled Matawa, and the title of the poem, Khaled Matawa's poem, was For Many Years I've Been Prohibited from Mentioning the Moon. And this is a poem about being having a very different cultural history of the moon and Luna. Luna, unlike you, Khaled, I was told to look at the moon, know her hard, decipher her changing countenance so I could learn to know myself. But disobeyed that injunction too, worshipped instead her lesser twin. My native tongue has only one word for both moon and month, one luna that begins in a sliver of flesh, blooms into a woman of unrivaled beauty, then shrivels back into herself. same Luna who, invisible in the sun's wings, tallies our desires, cadences, our breath, words, the blood cord of sisterhood. But I knew nothing of desire or blood, so when, at 14, I emerged from the unlit bathroom with crimson streaks on both thighs, I was convinced my body had split open to let death in. The sight sent my grandmother and aunts into a teary glee, refueled throughout the evening with shots of plum brandy, frenzied perinitas, and toasts to Sister Luna and her visit to our house. No one told me I was going to be fine. Later, hunched among drunks on grimy trains, I'd ease my eyes through drapes of smokes onto her shaped brightness, conjure my raffish twin Jasmine behind the iron curtain. From this new continent to which I've fastened my life, some nights I think I see my daughter, unfinished still, in the ashen crater below the moon's right eye. But my Romanian book of myth insists it's only Cain sloshing his jug of blood. And this poem, the collection Father Durr doesn't have many cheery or uplifting poems. And this is probably the only one, and it's not even that funny. But it's about being initiated into this exclusive club I realized years later that was meeting in my parents' apartment once a month. Lena, the hairy orb, the rebels. Lena, unmarried neighbor, marches in armed with blocks of wax and paintbrushes, smacks scarlet kisses on my cheeks, rolls thickly cold eyes, cursing the factory rats who stripped her to check for stolen fabric. The first Saturday of the month, my brother and father invent errands for themselves, and soon more neighbors arrive with gifts of razor, camphor, bruised apricots. Sprawled naked on flowery pillows, the women sip coffee and nibble rum rosettes, praising each other's flesh. Each gained gram, a measure of sly networking or culinary ingenuity. They swap sugar, nail polish, condoms, smuggled spandex, chuckle as they test the firmness of each other's breasts, slather nipples and faces with raw honey and fruit purees. Lena swears the best rejuvenated semen and wants to start a business. She half jokes I'll marry a Sagittarius with penis rising. Who knows, maybe even an American. Meanwhile, she says, she'll sew me a knockout bikini for I'm already sprouting. 14, I can't bear to touch my body and loathe mirrors. Mother hefts in the bubbling cauldron. Ribbons of pale sap raid the skin, uprooting resurgent colonizers. Eyebrow stumps, stiff blades, fine hairlings, U-down of lush pubes. I squeeze the bristly belts of wax into a globe and smooth continents with sweaty fingers. When nobody watches, I smell the future. Frankincense, honeybees recocking hives, a hint of dizzying sweetness. But the camphor corks off, the 100-watt bulbs burning, and Lena's steaming pot of chamomile hovers now under my blemished face.
If you just tune in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest today is the poet Mihaela Moscaluk. And I wanted to ask you, Mihaela, about your images. I mean, they're so striking. And, you know, in the poem Luna, where you read, I was afraid my body had split open to let death in. There's so many moments in your poems when I'm surprised, but also sort of driven to another place, sort of to a more visceral deeper place, which I love that movement in your work.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's really great. Can you talk about creating those kind of images which drive us to those deeper places? I mean, you talked about darkness. I wasn't thinking in terms of darkness, but in terms of depth.
Sure. That image in particular, it has to do very much with the whole, it's a very strange attitude toward sex and sexuality, and also toward coming of age and various rites of passages in Romania. And I think what happened, this is how the image came together. I had, at that point, I was 14 when I got my period, but I had witnessed a number of very tragic episodes, tragic things happening to very close friends. And abortion was illegal in Romania. And so I lost friends when I was 13, 14 in high school, who were forced to carry their babies, or that was part of the communist propaganda. The ideal was the five children per family, and so women were not only encouraged, but there were all kind of incentives to have children very early on. And so I have friends who are 13, 14, and we had no kind of sexual education in formal or private. And so I was very, very confused about my body and about what was happening. And but there was this other sort of underground culture that I was not part of, that was celebrating, was also very much celebratory of female sexuality. And the previous poem, the Lena poem, was exactly about that, how women were celebrating their bodies and celebrating every inch of the flesh. So I think I would like to think that my mother did the best she could to introduce me to that, but she didn't really have the language, and she didn't have, she didn't have, I don't know what she needed to do it. So those, in many ways, growing up in Romania, the moments that gave me most freedom and they were liberating and brought me to writing are also the darkest moments, the moments of deep revelation. And many of them had to do with the body and mm-hmm. the female sexuality. So,
okay. Well, you talk about not having the language, or your mother not having the language, maybe not having the language around you. You have a lot of language, you obviously do. How was it that you came to be a poet and, in that setting,
I came to poetry very, very late. I started writing in 2005. So I never wrote. I came to the United States in 1996. And I never wrote poetry in Romanian. So I came to writing through a number of strange circumstances, a number of threads. And one of them, I was working on my dissertation, and it was very theoretical, and I felt so removed from real language and from what had brought me to the English language. I grew up speaking only Romanian, and I absolutely fell in love with language. I don't have any predisposition for learning languages. And so what had brought me back to what had brought me to English was actually, I felt, was distancing me from, the core of my love. And so I started writing just to get away from the damage, the brain damage that I was experiencing. And then a number of other things. I heard Gerald Stern read, and he was the first poet I heard read, I experienced poetry through the body. I experienced poetry for the first time in my life as something that was absolutely alive and essential, and something that could become indispensable, to life. And then my husband, Michael Waters, introduced me. I started reading voraciously. We had magazines, we had journals coming into the house. So I started writing because I fell in love with the sound work. But also, when I decided I was not going to go back to Romania, I realized that part of my life and my previous self was in danger of disappearing. And so it became very much, I really write out of necessity. I don't think of myself necessarily as a poet. I think of someone who writes poetry out of necessity, out of fear of forgetting, out of fear of forgetting what was important and remains very important to me. So.
Okay, great. Okay, can you read some more?
Sure, thank you. I'll be happy to. So I'll read a poem that's called Self-Portrait. Evenings, her breathing became so strenuous, the girl had to focus, catch the air, will it toward shafts of inflamed muscle, defeat all obstacles, just as in fairy tales, for she was the heroine destined to live and undo some vague curse, some grape of evil that made doctors shrug and old wives cross themselves. She came to anticipate the danger with a warm quiver, though some nights the labor so difficult she was rushed to the hospital. 18 months, this peculiar case of asthma, as the girl grew diaphanous. What if she could not bite the air hard enough? What if, in place of air, she found nothing? What if she bit into nothing? She had thinned to air, so the doctors ordered more tests. Thousands of pinworms slithering upwards to hatch in the worm esophagus. One last airy feast before the ragged ball expired and a new palette of threadheads resumed the cycle. They shared her breath, and she loaned them her body. Though by now they're all dying in teas and tinctures of wormwood. She bloomed, moved far away, cured her children's parasites with Pirentel. She no longer remembers the old fear, but can still taste the air, its penchant for disappearing. And I would like to read a poem that touches upon an important issue in my life, and one of the reasons maybe why I keep writing. And as you probably know, discrimination against Roma Gypsy has been widespread in Europe, and particularly in Eastern Europe. And for a number of years, I worked with children in orphanages and children on the streets of northern Romania. And many of them were either Roma or of Roma descent. And they're all kind of myth about how they ended up in the orphanage. And Romanians are still, and Europeans, Eastern Europeans, are still having a hard time acknowledging the history of discrimination against Roma. And one of the things that was happening in the 80s, Roma women were sterilized without their knowledge while they're receiving assistance for other medical conditions. And a lot of children from unsettled Roma families were taken away and placed in orphanages. So that explains to a large extent the high percentage of children of Roma descent in Romanian orphanages. Annunciation, Romania, 1990s. Come sunrise, she shouts the garden snakes away. Smolders shack and pig pen in fumes of last year's rags. Sways the size above wide-eyed peonies, then sprinkles tsuika on the hirsute hickories, seaming her corn patch to the unbroken woods. She gives the boiling linen a wide swirl, rests the wooden tongs on the cauldron lip, then slips out of the cotton robe and into the barrel that brims with rainwater, its warmth so filling, so kind to the dry womb. When the state seized her boys, save them, she wished she'd never had them. And when they pried out her last dead fish, she didn't know they'd scraped and clamped her clean, blind with pain on that spilling mattress, but not deaf. Dirty sow, retarded gypsy. Only later, she remembered the heat of the head crowning, the sharp cry breaching the nurse's laughter, how she'd touched him before they touched him. So he may not be dead, just taken. 10 years now, she's been watching for a sign, the wine barrel's belly worm with promise. As in childhood, when the oak teased out of fall its distinct scent, clover and honeysuckle, the last batch, the last fermenting. The barrel's eye has grown more cloudy and oily spills rim her flesh. But the cuckoo's song, breathing sharp greens into last year's grasses. They say, as long as you have a mother, there will always be flowers on your tombstones.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest today is the poet Mihaela Moskaluk. You know, those poems are so affecting and so strong, and I just keep thinking of the body and women's bodies and what is driven underground is what I think of the most with your work, what is driven underground and how it comes forward in your work. And yet you talked about the discrimination, you know, against the Roma gypsies as being something that keeps you writing. Often when people write political poems, they're terrible, and these are such amazing poems. You know, how do you avoid having opinions and didactic voices in your work? I mean, I think it's
not as hard as it sounds. I think if you have the first-hand experience, and I'm not saying that you can't write good political poems, good poems that are, and I think I was a social worker for 4 years before coming to the United States, and I think I write out of those experiences, and I try to do the stories justice. And I've learned so much. Probably the most important things I've learned in life, pretty much everything I need to know, I think all the survival skills, everything about tough love, everything I've learned from the children and the street children I worked with. And so Emil Cioran, the Romanian-born French philosopher essayist, said that anyone who writes or speaks in the name of the other is an imposter. And so when I am very much aware of that, and I keep that in mind as I write. And so for me, the options were, you know, you do not give a voice to the stories, you do not give a voice to these people you care deeply about and who are never going to have a voice, who are never going to write their own stories, or you are the imposter, and appropriate to a certain extent those stories. And so, yes, I do have a lot of trepidations about doing justice to the stories, and I think in a way, it becomes easier to let the stories tell their own, you know, their own version of the truth. And I try the best I can not to interfere with that, you know, not with the story itself. I feel I have. That's one of the few things I can return in a way to the culture and to, you know, to my Romanian history.
Okay. We have time for a couple more. Okay,
thank you. Okay. I'm going to read actually from the middle section. The middle section of the book is either about some of the children I worked with or in their voices. So I would like to read the last poem in the middle section. And this is called Christmas Carol, and it's for Mihai, born January 17th, 1980, died December 25th, 2007. After he said he wouldn't come in, after he said he would only eat things made of angel wings, after he said he wet the bed and couldn't sleep on my sheets, after he said he only wore coats made of discarded angel wings, after he said he was not born of mother, father, or shooting star, after he caroled again and sowed rice on the shining linoleum, after he ate pecans and drank nettle broth and honeyed his scabs, after he bathed and prayed and slipped back into soiled clothes, after he coiled under the empty crib and folded his hands into a pillow, after he rose and gave thanks and called me mother, After I pray, but I do not trust. After my belly is full of fear, but I am not a thief. He packed his wings and a silver spoon and returned to the streets. And I will read a poem that touches upon both experiences. For me, it's about the intersection of the two lives, the way they infuse each other and also mend each other in many ways. Cul-de-sac. And it has an epigraph from Equus by Peter Schaeffer. There is now in my mouth this sharp chain, and it never comes out. Last afternoon, I saw a teenage boy naked in the wooded valley beside our house. My son on my left hip making horses' sounds. The boy's upright back shone among pines. He was kneeling on a coverture of needles buckled with early crocuses. I kissed my son's temple, kept walking, but his soft woof made me look again. The boy's buttocks taut, a dancer's in mid-fouetté, and before him, barely visible next to the neighbor's weathered tool shed, a dog. The dog stilled, and I turned my back to the quiet woods, stumbled across scruffy lawn, waited behind the bedroom window. They emerged from the valley, boy and dog. The hooded kid who dribbles the ball cul-de-sac to cul-de-sac late afternoons, mute lab always at his side. And I thought of Brindy, the mutt raped for weeks by two of my street children. They'd stormed into the office, placed the bundle on my desk, blood soaking the sweatshirts in which they'd wrapped her. She didn't lift her head. The boy's bare chest, all scabs and scratches, no goosebumps, though snow winds barbed our windows. This is the only favor we'll ever ask, we swear. They kissed her neck and ears, turned around, then added from the threshold. When she heals, we want her back. Behind the window, my son hammered my hip. I would like to read a short new poem from my mother. My mother has been coming to the States for the last 6 years or so and working. She's been working, cleaning people's houses, and this is a poem for her. Alien resident. My mother rescues bitter cherries off Queens Boulevard. She catches and hoists them in the net of her pleated skirt, cradles them to her employer's kitchenette. On a leather bar stool that spins into the night, she pits and pits, keeps pace with the vermicular fanfare, bitter blood on the nails, petite castanets cackling in the dry mouth. On the trenches of dawn, crushed flesh dissolves in the sugar bath as she nods on one elbow on the squills of bedroom doors. She spoons coffee, keeping count aloud, and pours milk for kids' pancakes as instructed with a measuring cup. The perfect scale of her eyes she wastes on homespun sanitizers, 2/3 vinegar, 1/3 peroxide for sinks, counters, her eager beaver, his dumbbells. She jogs through the day in bark slippers, mother dear, elm embossed with perfectly knived hearts. What's she doing here, my mother, in a toddler cot, apron pockets lined with shriveled fruit worms, jars of preserve ticking under the mattress like hand grenades?
It's the poetry of Mihaela Moskaluk, and she's reading from her book, Father Dirt. Thank you so much. That was wonderful.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Prosody, a weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. Writers appearing on Prosody also have their work showcased in Chapter and Verse, a biweekly feature in Pittsburgh City Paper, the Arts Entertainment News Weekly, published every Wednesday. Prosody is produced by Jan Beatty and Alan Wadey. Our sound engineers are Michelle Stoner and Lisa Alexander. Please tune in Saturday mornings at 6:30 for Prosody, 90.5 FM.